Hello and welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Samantha Simmons. Today we welcome back our stamp and coin experts. David Tripp is the former director of Sotheby's Coin, Tapestry, and Musical Instrument Departments. He's author of Illegal Tender, Gold Greed, and the Mystery of the Lost 1933 Double Eagle, as well as a fine art consult. Consultant and cartoonist. So many things. And Bob Scott was a curator to a private collection, senior technical specialist at Christie's, and head of the stamp departments at both Sotheby's and Bonhams. He is currently a private consultant whose clients include Sotheby's, for whom he cataloged the world's most valuable stamp. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. You can also give us an email at voxpop@wamc.org. David and Bob, welcome back to Vox Pop.
Well, welcome to you. You look nothing like Ray. My goodness, and your voice has changed. You sound so much younger.
Sometimes. I get that sometimes. Yeah.
Lovely to be here, Samantha.
Yeah. So we will have some fun today.
We will, from the sounds of it. So we're just going to start off with something
really
easy.
You want us to start off?
Yeah, you know what? You guys start off.
We're going to do it?
You take
it. Okay, we're going to ask you a question.
Oh, no.
And then, okay, so tell us about this amazing discovery. A classic rarity, an unknown example. Tell us all about that.
Are we talking about a coin or a stamp here?
We're talking about the 1804 dollar.
Oh, an 1804 dollar. You mean of the 15 known
1804
dollars?
No, Bob, now there are 16 known, and that's the amazing discovery.
Do tell.
I will. The 1804 silver dollar is, from the time I was little, which is longer than some people in this room have been alive.
Me included.
You included. Thank you. Add the two of you together, and you're still not up to me. But the 1804 silver dollar in coin world, and actually in the real world, for many years was considered the king of American coins because of a great PR man from the 1930s and 40s. And the 1804 silver dollar was advertised on the back of comic books. If you can find this coin, we will pay you $1,000 or $2,000. And from the time I started in the business many, many years ago, there were 15 known. And that was it. And there were books written on the 15 that were known. And within a week ago, an announcement was made that the 16th example turned up in a collection that was put together in the 1940s. And it's coming to auction at the end of this year. And the estimate is $3 to $5 million. Now, the interesting thing about the 1804 silver dollar, on top of the fact there are only 16 known.
You're going to tell us it was.
What am I going to tell you? You can tell me the story.
Well, it's obviously a coin from 1804.
No, but that's the thing. The original 1804 silver dollar wasn't made in 1804. Mm. It was made in 1834. And this makes enormous sense to nobody whatsoever, but the point was that in 1834, the United States government was engaging in diplomacy around the world, and they thought it would be really grand, because we were still a very baby, young country, to give the rulers of these other countries an example of every coin that we had made in 1834. And so they put them in these beautiful leather cases, struck them perfectly so they were shiny. The only problem was they didn't make any silver dollars in 1834, and they didn't make any $10 gold pieces in 1834. So they went back to the books and found out the last year they made them was 1804. So they recreated a coin that actually didn't exist to put into a proof set to give to a king or something like that. Well, collectors found out about these coins, and of course, collectors rule the world. And they start coming to the mint, and they said, oh, do you have any extras of those? Because I don't have one in my collection, and I can't find one anywhere. And so in the 1850s and 60s, a group of enterprising mint employees, after hours, found the dies that were made for this coin and made some new ones so that they could line their own pockets with some money.
Can you imagine that? You're working at the mint, the strictest of securities, and what you say to the security guard, I'll just be working a couple of hours overtime tonight.
Yeah, so I can make a few extra thousand.
Yeah, so I can make a few extra dollars, quite literally.
So they went so far as to make these coins and then they artificially worn them down so that they could sell them to collectors. Like, oh, I just found this in my change, and they would turn up in an auction. And this is in the 1880s. People were spending $500 and $600 for these coins, so it was a lot of money back then. So basically, what this coin is, it is a reproduction of a coin that never existed in the first place, but there are only 15 known, and collectors just
16.
Salivate. 16. Thank you for correcting. Yeah. I sit corrected. Mm-hmm. The last example of an original one sold about 3 years for $7.5 million.
Why is this estimate lower?
This estimate is, well, the restrikes, the fakes, which is what this one is, from the 1850s, are theoretically not as desirable. My personal opinion is the estimate is conservative. When we come back in December, it will have been sold, I guess. My guess, it's going to bring $10 million or more.
But it's a lot of money. Tell us the 1962 set.
Well,
because this is a great story.
This is the whole thing. In 1962, there were only 14 of them known. And two little old ladies in England went into a coin dealer, and they came with this little box, beautiful leather box, and they wanted to sell it to the dealer. And the dealer looked at it and said, well, these are very nice. These are from 1834. Ooh, and you've got two from 1804, but there are two coins missing. In any event, he bought it, and it was an 1804 silver dollar. It was one of the original ones that was actually presented to, in this case, the King of Siam. And it was the same King of Siam that The King and I is based on. So there was this wonderful, magical story behind it, The King and I. I don't think the people came in humming this tune, but and one theory is that they were actually descendants of Anna and the King.
Leon Owens.
Anna Leon Owens. Anyway, that was that was purchased by the dealer, who then sold it privately in about 1980, and it was the first coin-related object, the first numismatic object that sold for $1 million. And it's now in a private collection in California, and depending on how this one does, and it's gorgeous. I remember I was first shown it by the dealer who was selling it, and it was an old friend of mine. He said, David, would you like to see something special? And so I went down to his bank vault, and he handed me this plain manila envelope, and he said, see what you think. And I opened it up, and out came this beautiful tooled leather case, and I opened it up. My eyes are still rolling around on the floor, and he said to me, David, he said, what do you think it's worth? And I sort of stuttered, and I said, $1 million. And he said, that's what I'm asking. And that's what he got.
And $1 million was $1 million back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you make that every day here at WAMC, right?
Yeah, totally.
That's a side gig. Yeah, I figured that's why.
It sounds better than 10 Bitcoin.
Yeah, but 10 Bitcoin is just the same, isn't it?
Yeah,
no, actually,
exactly.
10 Bitcoin would be more. Anyway, so that's the story of the 1804 silver dollar. If you want to buy one,
your pockets better be heavy.
Thank you. Exactly. So
and
over to you,
to be
Bob.
Lighter.
The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@WAMC. We're talking coins and stamps. Bob, what's happening in the stamp world?
Well, we've got lots of things coming up. We've got a show coming up for anybody that's interested. Next year, the International Stamp Show of the United States is taking place in Boston. And this is a show taking place over the Memorial Day weekend, where pretty much anything and everything in stamps will be on display. It'll be at the conference halls in Boston.
Convention hall.
And the convention halls in Boston, down by the...
in the seaport area.
In the seaport area. But it's going to be 10 days. Everything and anything is going to be there.
That's a lot of stamps to look at.
That's a lot of stamps.
This is a show that takes place every 10 years.
Only
and the reason...
Every 10... Do they don't do it? They know it's not an annual.
Oh,
so
oh
every
no.
10 year,
every...
Wow.
Different countries have...
One day per year.
One day per year.
Yeah. But please. And the reason I'm mentioning it is one of the ways that it is supported, it is terribly well supported by the United States Postal Service. They've just issued a stamp. And one is the...
Oh, it's the Midnight Ride of Paul Revere.
Right.
Yep, that makes sense.
The church.
Oh, the
North Church.
Yep,
yes.
Yep.
So,
really, of course, Bob shouldn't be talking about our American stamps and the midnight ride of Paul Revere. We were trying to keep you out of the country.
Well, it brings up an interesting thing because obviously it's taking place now, and the first one I remember was 1776, which of course was the bicentennial.
You're showing your age now.
And now David, you're going to save me terribly by telling me what we're celebrating next year.
Oh, this is the semi-quincentennial. Did you know that?
Or to you and me, the 250th.
I did know this because my brother's obsessed with the post office.
And the semi-quincentennial, which means the half 500th anniversary.
Yep,
which is,
I did know
which
this.
It's going to be a big thing. But to coin and stamp dealers and people involved in coins and stamps, it's a bit of a problem.
Mm. Why?
Because the amount of memorabilia that was produced. We are still plagued by the amount of memorabilia that was created in 76, none of which, with maybe a couple of very small exceptions, has any value whatsoever. So reproductions of the Declaration of Independence, the commemorative coins, the commemorative stamps, the commemorative sheets, the commemorative envelopes, the commemorative posters, everything was reproduced, and I have no doubt that the infamous the $2 bill.
Yeah, I love having a $2 bill.
Which still carry around, and you know what they're worth?
$2. And if you go to Monticello, to the museum there, and you go to the museum shop, they'll give you $2 bills in change because Thomas Jefferson's face is on them.
Mm. Right. But they're very attractive stamps. And actually, I have to say, it's such a good design. You can look it up online. The stamp has literally just been
They almost look
introduced.
Like woodcuts, don't they? They have that wonderful earthy
They have a
look
wonderful... It's the post office, but you can buy it as a T-shirt now. It's a brilliant
T-shirt.
But if
you get the T-shirt, can you stick it on the envelope and mail a package?
I don't think it has postage value, but it might be rather interesting to try to wedge one into a mailbox and see where it ends up. But no, so the world is coming. We're also having, the US has a spectacular stamp coming out. In fact, two stamps, the SpongeBob SquarePants.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Samantha,
we're going to talk about it after the break.
Oh, after the break. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
After the break.
All right.
Okay.
We're going to take a quick break here. We're listening to Vox Pop. Welcome back to Vox Pop. We're talking stamps and coins with our experts, David Tripp and Bob Scott. We're going to head to the phone here for a call from Greg. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Greg.
Hey there.
Hi, Greg.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Hi, Greg.
Hi there. Hi there. So, quick question about Lincoln Head pennies. Is this actually the last year of the Lincoln Head penny? How many were minted?
How many were minted this year?
Yep.
How many billion do you want? Yes, Bob.
Two billion?
There's a theoretically going to be stopped. There is legislation going through Congress as we speak to cease it. It hasn't yet happened. But to give you an idea, they generally make between 7 and 8 billion a year in recent mintages.
Oh, it's gone up to that much.
Yeah. And, the point is, right now, it may not be the last year of making them because they still have lots of blanks that have yet to be produced. Which have been paid for. So they will continue, in all likelihood, to strike the coins until they run out of the metal blanks to make the coins. So this may not exactly be the last year that they're made. But there are so many in circulation now that even if they stop making them, estimates I've seen indicate that they will easily continue to be in circulation, well, let's say for the next 20, 25 years.
Or longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are
billions and billions.
Yeah. I mean, to give you an idea, from 2010, 4 billion made, 5 billion the following year, 5 billion the year after that, 6 billion, 7 billion, 8 billion, 8 billion. So they are made in just gargantuan quantities. And lots of people still have them in penny jars in their houses. And at some point, you know, people will realize that they act, as annoying as they can be, they still are money, and you can spend them, and you know, you have enough of them, you can buy something.
Yeah. I mean, there's probably 500 for every member of the population.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. Yeah. And it costs
About you and three I to as, four, as taxpayers, it costs us 3 or 4 cents to make 1 cent.
It's
Is that why they want to stop producing
them? That's one of
them?
The theories, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it is actually. And nickels are even more expensive to make. But when you get to dimes and quarters, the government makes a profit. So there is, Samantha, this is new to you. I've said this on the show before. There's something called seigniorage, which goes back to the Middle Ages, seigniorage being the king. And so what happens is if it costs 5 cents, for example, to make a 25-cent piece, there's a 20-cent profit. And that profit goes to the king, or in this case, to the government. So they're making money on every quarter that they make. They're making, let's say, 10 cents or 20 cents. I don't know the exact figure. Whereas they're losing 3 cents on a cent. But at the end of the day, the mint is one of the few departments of the United States government that is actually, it pays for itself.
Makes
literally.
It makes
does
money.
Not get appropriations every year. They basically exist on the profit they made from making coins. And they're still there. So anyway, in any event, I hope that helps. You're still going to be plagued with pennies for a few years to come.
That sounds fairly good. Now, here's the thing. I know, because I can remember, 20 years ago, the cent cost 2.1 cents.
Yes.
Why didn't they get rid of it then?
There are always political ramifications. It could be the state that was producing most of the blanks, and there's somebody in Congress who wants to protect that business. Mm. Similarly, as we were discussing earlier, $1 bills, because they're paper. Well, that's a local thing. I mean, the Crane Paper Company, just right near where we're sitting right now, is an important part of the Massachusetts economy. Senator Kennedy was a very big supporter of it. And when they first tried to get rid of paper dollars and replace them with paper coins, Senator Kennedy battled it successfully for a long time.
Yes, and kept it going. But it is rather fascinating that Canada got rid of the penny. And nobody batted an eyelid.
No.
Nobody actually noticed.
No, no. But we'll have them for a few years to come. So Abe will be with us for a while.
Keep those Whitman books.
Yes, keep those Whitman books. And I'm sure the Whitman company that makes all the penny books will keep making them. So we're in good shape there. But I hope that answered your question if you're still there on the phone.
Thank you so much.
A pleasure.
Thanks, Greg. We have a question from Abby, so then I'll ask this before we talk about SpongeBob Sans, because I'm seething right now to talk about them. Abby wants to know, what's the most reliable way to get an estimate on an object and then find a buyer?
It depends on what the object is.
First and foremost.
Yeah. So if we're talking about a coin, the internet is a wonderful way to check things. There are companies that publish online price guides. Generally, the prices you see are the prices that a dealer is going to charge you. So you have to figure out discounting and things like that. And, you know, in all candor, although a lot of them are fakes and you have to be very, very careful, for general interest, you can look at eBay sometimes. You'll see things like that for coins. And,
right.
But, you know, we were talking about the 1804 dollar. If you type in on eBay 1804 silver dollar, you are going to find so many fakes that your eyes will cross. China has been making them for years. In my career, I can't imagine a week or month going by without somebody making an inquiry. Oh, I have an 1804 silver dollar. Am I a millionaire?
It's a very good question. First of all, you don't necessarily need to find out what it is. Find out what you think it may be.
Right.
Once you've got an idea that it may be something that's worth, then you can start taking photographs and sending photographs to experts if necessary, if it ticks a few of the right boxes. Eventually, you want to physically put it in front of somebody's eyes. But photographs these days, photographs or videos.
Or cell phone photographs are incredible quality.
Oh, yeah,
days.
Snap and go. We're also getting to the point, especially with coins, that there is software that will take a picture and will give you an idea. It might tell you it is something, but it'll give you enough to know whether you should make further inquiries. but don't start spending the money until a physical person has looked at it and told you what it is.
But, you know, for example, if you've got a coin or a stamp, Bob and I are always happy to help. And, you know, if you send us an email or something like that, we can at least start you on the way to find. Because Bob and I are not dealers, just so people know. We're only here to give guidance and a suggestion.
Yes.
So, but that's an easy way to start. And
exactly.
Hopefully there's something out there. You know, there are treasure. I mean, literally, this family had this 1804 dollar for a better part of 75 years. And suddenly, ka-ching, they're going to have a big tax bill next year.
They're going to have a green Christmas. Yes, yes. So tell us about SpongeBob SquarePants.
Okay, so SpongeBob SquarePants, for all the listeners or my age, you know who SpongeBob SquarePants is. It's a TV show on Nickelodeon. I think they still make it, but...
They do.
Oh, they do.
26 years
later. I don't think
later.
It's the same as what I was watching as a kid, but they recently issued stamps with SpongeBob and Patrick on them. They are already in my household.
You got them?
Yeah, I got them. Of course I got them.
And they will be.
She's looking at us with contempt.
And they will be on an envelope near you very soon.
Probably.
And you will not miss them.
No.
Look for bright yellow.
Bright yellow or a giddy bunch hanging on each other. So, why? Do you know why they made these? Are these worth anything eventually?
We were actually. In answer to that, it really depends how many get used. No, to be honest, probably not. They are just purely for entertainment. If they are so well received and supplies run short, then, of course, there'll be a supply and demand situation.
Unless it's autographed by SpongeBob himself.
Exactly. Or, I mean, the cast, because it's so old, the cast members are all getting older.
Yeah.
So it's quite a...
The voice actors,
It's kind of an interesting thing. But David and I were talking about how do you get to be on a stamp? And the thing is, you have to be... You can be proposed. You can get there. First of all, popular culture, they will come to you and they will offer, especially if it's a particular...
An iconic image,
it's a particularly iconic person who dies. The general rule is you have to be dead to be on a stamp. Obviously, a show doesn't count so much.
So you mean cancellation of a TV series?
Exactly.
It doesn't count. Okay.
But you can get on a stamp by petition. You can petition the government.
I'm going to do a writing campaign with my friends when
yes.
I'm like 60
well, are you,
yeah. or 70 or 80.
For Vox Pop?
Yeah, I don't know.
I
might do something cool in
Well, actually, 50 maybe
years,
Vox Pop should
maybe.
Have a stamp.
Yeah, the Vox Pop stamp, I think.
Actually, it was rather interesting. They did, I mean, many years ago, very well-received television program, The West Wing, covered it.
Yeah, yep.
And because a character was coming up, before they start giving them stamps, they go through you and your career with a fine tooth comb.
Of course, yeah.
Because you don't want people... I mean, this was a case of supporting independence of a particular country, and it caused all sorts of trouble. But all of these, both stamps and coins, they have citizens' advice.
Yeah, for coins,
bodies.
I was on the Citizens' Coinage Advisory Committee.
Interesting.
So they did a remarkably good job.
When the state's quarters, I was on the committee, so designing the reverses, they would bring the designs in and the committee would talk about them and see whether they were good or bad or artistically relevant. One of the other ones, there are the nickels that celebrated Lewis and Clark's going across the country. And I actually helped design one of those coins, which was based on the Indian peace medals that Clark and Lewis gave to the tribes as they were going on. It was a fascinating process.
And the funny thing is, with the stamp show coming up and the stamp coming for the stamp show, the first commemorative stamps that commemorate events, people, and what have you, up until that point, it was really dead presidents and Washington landmarks. And in 1893, they had in 1892, they had the Columbian Exhibition, Exposition, in Chicago, which was to celebrate the 400th anniversary of and they decided to produce a whole set of stamps, even back then.
And coins.
From 1 cent, well, the same with you, one cent to $5 in stamps and $50 in coins, right?
Well, no, 50 cents.
The $50, that's
the Pan Am Pacific, that was Pan Am Pacific, that's 1915.
But the interesting thing is, the idea came a little late because the exhibition opened in 1792. The stamps didn't turn up.
1892. Thank you, Bob.
The stamps didn't actually turn up until 1893.
1893.
I've got that. And of course, they put out these enormous high value stamps, which nobody bought. So
now, those
course,
must be very rare.
They're incredibly valuable.
Yeah.
All right, let's head to the phone. We got a call from Linden, Massachusetts. Hello.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hello.
Ah.
Dika, are you there?
Hello.
That's okay.
I guess
not. We will
not.
Go to Roy in Saratoga. Hi, Roy. How are you?
Hello. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hello, Roy.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you for taking my call. Listen, I inherited a lot of stuff from my dad who recently died, like a 1955 Dodgers signed autographed baseball, but also an enormous stamp collection, including the Colombians, by the way.
Up to which value?
$5 or $10, I forget.
Oh, $5. It's a black stamp with Columbus in the middle of it.
Oh, yeah, I'm in my car, so I don't have that.
You don't travel with your stamp collection. Horrors.
You know, not anymore. When I was a kid, we used to do it. But that was 60 years ago. And
joyriding with your stamp collection. Okay.
I don't do that, and I don't have a 60-year-old car. So where do I begin? What do I do? I don't want to keep them.
Well, it sounds like you not only have stamps, you have baseball cards, you have all manner of things, and...
No, my mother threw out my baseball cards, I'm afraid.
That's what mothers are for. I think mine went as well, yeah.
And if mothers didn't throw them out, they wouldn't be valuable.
Oh, I can't believe this. I know. No, I have a baseball signed by the 1955 Dodgers.
By all of them?
They won the World Series.
Wow.
Yeah.
That will have some value. That's not our specialty, but knowing... Yeah, that's a great team, and... But for the stamps, if you can, do you want?
Yeah,
if you want to send some images, particularly the Columbus issues, you can send Bob some images. If you send it to Coin and Stamp Guys, all spelled out at Burke.com. Coin and Stamp Guys, all spelled out, at Burke, BERK.com, then Bob can give you some proper guidance on the best way to dispose of them.
And essentially, it's I'm going to look at quality and really the volume involved. This, to me, sounds like a collection that would probably do well at auction. And depending on where you are and how easy it is for you to travel, I can point you in the direction of one or two reputable companies who will look after you.
Yeah.
And that's really all you want.
Yeah,
I appreciate it very much. And just in the lamentable department, I gave my cousin the baseball signed by Christy Mathewson.
Oh, that hurts. I hope he appreciates it.
That really hurts.
That does hurt.
Better,
yes.
He's retired on it. So anyway, listen.
Oh, he retired on it.
Let me repeat this. Coin and Stamp Guys.
Stamp Guys, all one word, yep, at Burke, B-E-R-K, as in Berkshire.
BERK.com.
Yep, you betcha.
And really, we're just going to look at some of the earlier stuff that you've got, and we'll give you a recommendation. And let's hope you've got something spectacular and they're in lovely condition.
And let's hope your retirement will come out of it.
Exactly.
Well, I'm 2 years into it. So thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Ryan. Thanks for calling.
The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. You're listening to Vox Pop. We're talking coins and stamps. And we will be right back after this quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Vox Pop. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. We're talking coins and stamps with David Tripp and Bob Scott. Let's head to our email real quick here. Hello. I have three U.S. silver dollars from 1878, 1879, and 1882. My grandfather, born in 1896, gave them to me when I was a child, probably in the early 1960s. They're in wonderful shape, not worn, but dark from color and age. Wondering if they're worth anything. That's from Barbara in Delmar.
Well, yes, they are worth something. 1878, the early years, that was the first year they made them. They're called the Morgan dollar. It's probably the most popular of all collected coins, apart from, you know, U.S. cents and Lincoln cents and things like that. But silver dollars, the big chunky things. And particularly now with the price of silver going up, their value has gone up substantially. And so to give you an idea, first of all, you said they're dark. Do not touch that. Let them stay the color they are. People that clean coins
destroy them.
The value. I learned the hard way when I was, I don't know, 10 or 12 years old, and I got a coin in my a penny in my change, and it was a rare date. I looked it up, and I thought, wow, it's worth this brown, but if it's nice and shiny, it'll be worth more. So I got the Twinkle Copper Cleaner out and polished it up and took it to the coin shop. And the man there said, you had a nice coin. And he said, never, ever do anything about it. And so I took it home and I buried it in the backyard to tone it over. And then we moved. So it's still there. One of these days, I'll go back and retrieve it. But the bottom line is, the answer to this is never, ever, ever try and clean a coin. There are specialists who know how to do it. And even then, they look artificial. So don't. But in any event, regarding these coins, these are generally pretty early date, but they're going to be worth, at least in worn condition, a little bit. They'll probably be worth about $35 to $40 a piece. And the value will go up depending how nice they are. So 1878, they can be worth a few thousand dollars if in really tip-top condition. But condition is everything. As Bob will tell you, we sold at Sotheby's about 5 or 6 years ago a silver dollar from 1884 made in San Francisco. And one that is worn and beat up, you can buy for $70. We had one that was in absolutely perfect condition and probably the finest known, and it brought $750,000. So in any event, there is some money there. Probably not the earth-shattering amount, but still there's wonderful things. And having come from your grandfather that was born not around, not far from the time they were made,
they could be good. And from a non-coin perspective, it's something that is extremely fine. May look to you that it's, yes, a little bit grubby.
Yeah.
But it's completely wrong. If it's bright and bright and bright and shiny, that's not what it should be looking like.
No. Yeah, the people in the coin, but to somebody else, they'd say it's tarnished. No, in the coin business, we call that toned. It sounds so much nicer.
Patina.
Patina.
What a lovely word.
Very nice.
Yes.
All right. Let's go to Sue in Saratoga Springs. Hi, Sue.
Hello, Sue.
Hi, Sue.
Hi. Thanks very much. It's a really interesting show. I have a question. My husband has a collection of 1,300 pennies that he collected when he was a paper boy, and he's 81 years old now. They're the pennies from 1943. I think they were zinc.
The zinc pennies, we used to call them steelies.
Are they worth anything?
Not a lot, unless they're in absolutely pristine condition. They do turn up. They were made in the millions, as were so many of these things. The ones that you want were the ones that made by mistake in copper. But
he obviously knew well enough to...
Yeah, he would have known.
He would have known.
So Lincoln pennies from 1943 are generally going to be worth under a dollar a piece unless in perfect condition.
But that's still
incredible. It's got 1,300 of them. It it can add up. It can add up a bit. But it will depend on the absolute
condition. You know, they've been stored all these years in a jar with oil. I don't know if that was a good idea or not, but that was what was suggested to him when he was a kid.
Well, I think that was to prevent them from rusting. And it probably, I think the process of cleaning them is going to be more damaging than not.
And they shouldn't have rusted. They were zinc
coated steel. But they do tone over in a very, we were talking about toning. Steel coins did not tone well.
They more oxidized
than oxidized than not, exactly. But, you know, in very worn condition, they're worth 30 or 40 cents each. When they're uncirculated, they're worth about a dollar each. If they're super duper uncirculated, they can be worth $6 or $7. But the trick is to figure out how to get the oil off. And I'm not a chemist, so I don't think I'm the appropriate person to answer that question.
But however, it's probably going to end up being at least $500 to $1,000.
It could do if they were mint state when they went into the jar.
And and there will obviously be some better, some worse. But even with an average, you're going to be closer to 1,000.
Yeah. So there is some money there. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And who would I ask about what would be the right way to get the oil off them?
Why don't you send us an email later? Because I'm sure there's an easy way of doing it. Because it's going to be like an olive oil, is it? Not like a motor oil.
No, I think it's probably. I would guess it would be more like motor oil. I mean, I can't see imagine somebody.
That's what I'm guessing, but honestly, we don't know.
Yeah, and I would think olive oil in the 1950s was not really all that.
Oh, it was probably wouldn't be that stable because it's mineral. But for the most part, you're probably going to start off with some kind of a kid, because if you just take them out and put them on kitchen towels, you're going to get 99.9% of it off in the first place, aren't you? You just don't want to be rubbing them.
Yeah, don't rub it. Yeah.
Right.
Blotting them would be best.
Shouldn't we be
I think this is probably where a good internet search
is probably
what you want.
It
would be a good place to start.
Shouldn't be that complicated.
Okay.
All right. Thanks,
Thank
Sue.
You for calling.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Let's go to Bruce in Mountainville. Hi, Bruce.
Hey, hello. Bruce.
Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
Hi. So I just joined the email blast from the U.S. Mint, and I gave them my home address, and they sent me a flyer about new medals and coins featuring Superman. Batman. Wonder Woman, and
Batman's on the way as well.
I'm very intrigued by it because comic books are so valuable now and collectible. I'm wondering if they're going in the right direction.
Well, they're being marketed. When you buy things, and I have many friends who do work at the Mint over the years, and I love them dearly, but their markups are pretty substantial. So, for example, the 1 ounce silver Superman medal that has just come out are priced at about 3.5 times the price of silver. So it's not cheap. On the other hand, if you like it, they've been selling out really, really quickly. I actually looked this up before I did the show because I was fascinated by it. The 2.5 ounce one, they're 20. All right, so the 1 ounce one you probably want to avoid because they have an unlimited mintage on it. So as many orders as they get at $135 a piece, they will fill. The 2.5 ounce size is limited to 25,000 being struck. And so you have an absolute number. They're $275 each, and they're limiting them to 25 per household. And of the 25,000, on the day that they started, they'd already sold a quarter of them out. So they were selling quickly. Modern coins don't personally appeal to me all that much, but there is a growing aftermarket in them. I'm not going to say it's a good investment or a poor investment. But
it's better than most, though.
This one is better
than
most.
Purely because it's limited in number.
Right. And the gold issue that they're making, which is 0.5 ounce of silver, so they are being priced at $2,600, and that's only about $1,000 over the melt value. Mm. But so it's a good deal. They've sold out over 50% of them by issuance day. Mm. So from that point of view, you know, from the markups and things like that, there probably will be an aftermarket. And as they build with Batman and Wonder Woman, there may be an established, but particularly the scarcer ones.
No,
my theory
true.
In everything is that the Mint and the Post Office make everything in such vast volumes that they're never going. There's never going to be enough buyers to catch up with the non-rarity of them.
Except that this is an incredibly popular subject.
Exactly.
And the U.S. is by far the lone country to have done this.
Right. Well, I mean, there are 50 countries that have already struck Superman coins.
Because it's a winner,
right,
and people
it's a
buy
winner,
it.
And people love Superman, and it is still a growing concern with the new film that's just come out. So this, you know, Mint products, it's quite candidly, I've always thought it's a little bit of a gamble buying from them. Sometimes they go up, sometimes not. But this seems like
very long-term investment.
Yeah,
very long-term, but pretty,
but if,
pretty to look at.
And if you're interested in it, go for it. That's my theory, as always.
Okay.
If I buy it, it'll go down in value. So
you steer clear of this one.
So I'm clear.
Well,
yeah, I'm
steer.
I remember you telling me to keep away from Bitcoin.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks,
all right.
Bruce.
I have a story to share with you about the Mint at West Point. I don't know if any of you have been there, but it used to be open for tourists to come through.
Yeah.
Mm. And I don't know if they still do that. But at one time, I had a shop at the PX in West Point. And as an artist, I knew some people, and they hired me to come into the Mint and refurbish all the cartoon figures that were painted on the walls to direct tourists about what went on in each room.
Oh, yep. They have a similar thing at the Philadelphia Mint. Yep, yep.
Okay, I found it fascinating because I was vetted each time I came through. You had this, you know, wanding and all the other.
Oh, and at the Philadelphia Mint, you have
to carry metal in and so on.
Oh, and take your shoes off, the works. Yeah,
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 the whole thing.
Yeah,
so it was fascinating, and I have to tell you, the one thing they overlooked was if somebody managed to bring in a minted coin that the West Point Mint had made and dropped it on the floor, all pandemonium would break loose.
Yep, 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 yep.
Because they didn't look about someone bringing something in like that. They only
in the old days, Mint employees used to bring something in, swap it with something else, and walk it out. So anyway, there's a fine line there.
Let's be okay. Nice
now
to those people.
I hear clearly what your website, was it Coin and Stamp Guys?
Yes,
G-U-Y-S or Guides? G-U-I-D-E.
G-U-Y-S. Guys.
And is and written out A-N-D?
Yes, all spelled out. Yep. Coin and Stamp Guys at Burke, BERK.com.
Yeah.
I'm going to send you an email. I have a collection of Morgan dollars and many other silver coins, historic,
on. We'll try and give you an idea of where to go.
Nice.
All right.
Thanks for
Bruce.
The call.
Thank you.
Let's go to Richard in Queensbury. Hopefully we can get a few more calls in. Hi, Richard. How are you?
I was wondering why you never see certain types of money in circulation. That would it be the $2 bill, the half-dollar coin, and the manganese and brass gold dollar coin?
People hate
banks
them.
Banks can give them to you because they are legal circulation.
They are legal.
They are legal tender. Yes,
they are legal tender. And as Bob just said, people hate them. With the half dollar, it's never been a popular coin when Benjamin Franklin was on it, and then of course when it went over to the Kennedy half dollar in 1964, everybody thought because Kennedy had just been murdered. That it would be an instant collectible. And no matter what they were, they saved them. And they kept saving them, and they saved more and more. And the years went by, and the Mint made more and more and more and more and more, and people saved them more and more and more and more. And they just don't come into circulation. The same thing with
the $2 bill.
The $2 bill, because a lot of people mistook a $2 bill for the $1 bill. put it in their wallet, and they bought something for a dollar and paid $2. And the person taking the $2, 9 times out of 10, didn't realize they were taking $2. You didn't get any change back.
Yep.
So in all these cases, the reason you don't see them, there's a good reason. It's unpopularity. It's unfamiliarity. Or because they're so scarce looking when you see them that people automatically save them.
Yeah, exactly.
So there we go.
All right.
I hope that helps a little bit.
Thank you. I think he's gone. Maybe.
Okay.
We'll go to Dave here. Hi, Dave.
Hello, Dave. Hello, Dave.
Dave, I'm on.
You're here.
Hello.
Hi.
First time ever. I'm going to go for tight, punchy radio.
Great.
Thanks a lot.
Thank
Great
you.
Show. Could you give me a quick rundown on the stand-up Liberty Quarter? What makes a good one? What makes a bad one? A found one? There's some on eBay they want a couple thousand for. There's some that, I don't know, they all look the same to me. I can barely make out the date. There may be an O in it.
Well,
tiny
what,
little
all right,
M.
Well, you've answered a lot of the question already by saying you can barely read the date. That takes the value down. The Standing Liberty Quarters have an odd date because it's in a little recess beneath Liberty's feet.
Sure. Yep.
If it has an O in it, it might be a 1920 or a 1930. They can be.
No, it would be an O second over. It would be like an O one or an O.
No, it wouldn't be an O.
Yeah,
no, well, it couldn't be an O one because they were first made in 1916. So if we do,
oh, okay.
if we do
right.
the math,
I'm with you.
If we do,
no, you know. Okay,
yeah.
go ahead.
Or,
yeah,
or it's incredibly
yeah.
rare.
Or it's incredibly rare. We didn't know about it. Yeah,
yeah right. So rare. Right.
So,
I'm with you.
So in you very, very worn condition, figure about $10.
Yeah.
And then if there, it's. The rarest date is 1927. There'd be an S, and that little S would be to the left of the one in the date. And San Francisco mm-hmm. is a rarer mint, and so you'd probably be worth $35 to $100. And if it's 1918, then you hit the jackpot. There's a 1918 with the 8 over a 7, and that could be worth $1,500 and up and up and up and up.
How's that?
But without that ability to read. All
right.
I see a little
yeah.
M.
If you can take a good picture.
Yeah, I'm going to try and do that with
take
you
a
guys,
good picture and
curious.
Send it to us. You know, it having the M is for Herman McNeil, who was the designer of the coin. It's the artist's initial. But if you can get it, sometimes it's easier for someone who's looked at a lot of coins. And
sure.
I regret to say I've seen more than I need to.
Yeah.
But I'll give you an idea if you send me a picture.
But the high-end stuff on eBay, stupid, ridiculous, they're not worth that.
Or they're in super-duper condition.
All right. We've got to wrap
yeah,
this up.
See.
But, Dave, thank
okay,
you so
I'm
much
out.
For
okay,
calling.
Thank you very much.
Thank
for
you.
Thank you, Dave.
So I want to thank everyone who called in and apologize to anyone I left on the line or in the inbox. Thanks to David Tripp and Bob Scott for joining us this afternoon. Support for Vox Pop comes from ArtSpark Saratoga Springs, New York, specializing in digital marketing for artists and arts organizations, website design, consultations, logos, and more, artspark.com, Ballet Flowers and Design, Malta, New York, a family-owned garden center and flower farm offering landscape, wedding design services, perennials, annuals, herbs, and interactive classes, balletflowers.com, and MKC Kitchen Cabinets, Inc., Troy, offering a range of cabinetry, including showplace cabinetry, countertops, design services, and showroom, mkckitchens.com. Thanks again for joining us today on Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Andrea De Leon. I'm Samantha Simmons. Tomorrow, the gardeners return. That's tomorrow at 2. Stay tuned now for 51%.